D1, number 5B.
Therefore, human capacity, she says, is slow to accept it. And then she goes on and says, mortals can never know the infinite. Mortals can never know the infinite. Mortals can never know the infinite. What else can know the infinite? Until they throw off the old man. That's the pith. Until we throw off the old concept of man. That old concept of man which we said man is this and man is that. And throw it off and accept but one thing, principle and idea in operation. Then when we throw off that old man and reach the spiritual image and likeness. She doesn't say and reach the new man. She even goes further than to say we have to reach the new man. The new man where we say man is the idea of God. Man is spiritual. Man is the compound idea. Where we go further than that and drop the old concept of man entirely and accept but the image and likeness. But the consciousness of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love, conscious of itself as an eternal operation of Word, Christ, Christianity and science, of omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscience and omniaction. What else can there be? But it is the acceptance of it that is necessary. What can fathom infinity, she then asks. Can you hear how over sentence and sentences she does not so much explain the text of fulfillment of the seventh day, but much more now also how that fulfillment is accepted. What can fathom infinity? And her answer. When we come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God unto a perfect man and then unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Again she gives the ladders. Again she gives the ladder to show that first we have to come to a perfect sense of what man is. What is it? Namely, the mind of Christ. The knowledge of the Son of God. The measure and the stature of the fullness, not of man, of Christ. That can fathom infinity. I'm sorry, I can't teach it. I can't teach it. It's a spiritual language which touches each one spiritually and speaks spiritually. But what I can do is to point out, what I can do is to awaken thought, to focus perhaps once a while on something new, but leave it to each one and to the mind of Christ to speak to each one. But you will see that now, in this seventh day, that sense of womanhood and motherhood takes over, which says only through the mind, capital M, of Christ, I can accept infinity. I can accept at all what has been said in the first 6 day of creation. That whole story is only accessible to consciousness through the mind of Christ. that mind which was also in Jesus Christ. That mind of Christ which Mrs. Eddy capitalizes, so that only the divine mind knows the divine mind. But only the divine spirit knows the divine spirit. Only the infinite can fathom the infinite. Only when consciousness is infinite, then we can fathom the breadth and the height, and the majesty and the glory of that unfathomable mind. No mortal capacity is able to fathom it. And can you see now how the seventh day lifts us still a step higher, though it isn't creation, lifts us a step higher over the sixth day. The sixth day just gave us the standpoint, where the standpoint said, the standpoint is God. The standpoint is God looking at himself. Life, truth and love being conscious of itself only as itself. How can you fathom that? You can't fathom it through any human capacity. You can only fathom it with the same mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love which is God. That is the mind of Christ. Also, in the last verse of Love and Love, in that seventh day, which you know so well, where we liked so much the biblical text says that on the seventh day God ended his work that he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. We like to take that as the idea of the seventh day of consciousness, as consciousness of fulfillment in rest, rest in action and action in rest, restful action, and we like that. But when the text goes further and Mrs. Eddy's exegesis goes on, again she comes on page 520. She comes again back to that sense, but how can I fathom it? Unfathomable mind is expressed, but how can I fathom it? Human language, she says, can repeat only the infinitesimal part of what exists. Human language. But there is another language. There is a divine language. There is the language of spirit. The language of spirit can fathom it. And so, that's what I've felt these last few minutes, you see, that human language just cannot convey what is meant by it, but there is a language which can convey it. And that's the spiritual language. It's that language which each one of us begins to learn and to understand in those quiet winter nights. Then the mind of Christ, that willingness within us, which says, all right, I'm willing to step forward and go on to the sixth day of creation and touch the seventh day as an oncoming thousand-year period, I touch it by seeing that there is only principle knowing itself as its infinite idea, and you put away all other, the old man you put away, as the text says, then the new language begins to speak. That new language may not speak in the first night and not in the second night. It may be stuttering after a few weeks. But little by little, that language becomes rather definite, becomes warm, becomes big, and it's a language that has infinite promise, terrific promise. And even if we see that promise only from afar at first, it's still mighty good. And step by step, that spiritual language which surpasses human capacity, which surpasses human language, speaks. Because it exists. That divine language is a present fact. It's right here and now in this room. And it's right everywhere. It's a language that exists. It's the first language that ever existed. And human language then is unable to convey what that wonderful language of spirit really says to each one of us. So that at the end of that paragraph we come to the highest climax, namely that when these days of creation become numerals of infinity, when we see that they are not stages of development, but that they are like in the 5,000-year period, numerals of infinity, then we begin to touch the sixth day of creation, where they become a calculus of ideas. What is the calculus of ideas? It's nothing else but mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love operating by itself as Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. And thought accepts that calculus, that divine, infinite calculus. In the seventh day, it accepts it. And that acceptance is that which prevents that our vision becomes fatalism, becomes abstract absolutism, becomes that state where we just say, oh, there is no evil, all there is good, all there is God and his ideas. That's all true, but it's all wrong until we have accepted it, and accepted it consciously as a divine, infinite calculus. I've accepted it in that language of spirit, where the new language of spirit pronounced, defined, clear-cut, speaks in those synonymous terms in its infinitude to us. Then thought accepts the divine, infinite calculus. This acceptance is one of the most important points I feel we have to consider, because just of this, that every new step is a higher step, but every higher step has its new dangers. And the new danger, and the big danger of this science of ideas, is that we leave it only in the creative sense, in the visionary sense, and not at that point where we welcome it, accept it, and conceive it. Again, I want to put it this way. So often when we are discussing this vision that there is only one thing going on, principle and its infinite idea, and seeing that man as a mortal cannot interfere with the infinite rhythm and infinite dynamic of that being, that the danger is then that either we say, therefore, I don't have to do anything about it, whereas the answer is, oh no, you have to be consciously conscious of it. That's the male. You have to be consciously conscious of it. You have, your consciousness must be filled only with this very one fact. Really, our chart, that's what's going on. And then the next thing the human thought asks is, well then, don't I have to do anything anymore about it? Don't I have to use it, to live it, to translate it, to prove it, if it proves itself, if it lives itself, if it applies itself? Don't I have then to do anything? Don't then I have to live it, to apply it, to use it, to demonstrate it? And we say no, because it demonstrates itself, it lives itself, it applies itself. And then the crucial question is, all right, then I don't have to do anything about it again. The seventh day says, yes, you have to do something very big about it. Our contribution, as far as we still can say of our, is to see that we put on the mind of Christ, and that only with the mind of Christ we can accept it. So that the contribution, so to say, still from the human, but on a very high level now, is to accept it and to conceive it. You have perhaps noticed that lately I have referred so often to John Dawley's Oxford Summer School Report 1949. And actually, I wonder if we have ever understood those reports. When they came out, they were wonderful. I studied them with deep interest. I found, oh, they are wonderful. And then I left them for a few years. And at the time when something new began to grow on our thought, that new thought of life, truth, and love, knowing but itself, and that this is the only principle, and that this principle does not know person, it seemed as if hell would have let loose. And in desperacy, I went back to those two reports, and it was as if hell would try to stop me to read those reports. I never felt more miserable than when I tried to cling after many, many years to those reports. But I stuck to it. And little by little, the resistance broke. And only now I begin to see that it was mortal mind's resistance that we really should see what John Dawley gave us 20 years ago. It's all there. What does he say in those reports? What we have to do in that whole story? After he tells us over and over that the divine principle applies itself, that the divine principle lives us, that the divine principle works by itself, that we don't have to make it work. What is that which he tells from first page to the last page, what can be our contribution? And it's only two words, more or less. To accept and to conceive. The seventh day. And thought accepts the divine infinite calculus. What the glory! How simple! Think of the moralist stage. How many moral laws he has to obey. Think of the Pharisees. How many laws they had to put up, which they had to keep. So many that they couldn't remember them. How few they have become today. Accept. And when we accept, and accept properly, we can't help that it conceives by itself. We can't help it. It grows on us. So that really, it's only one accept. And thought accepts the divine, infinite calculus. After 520 pages in the textbook, Mrs. Eddy uses for the first and only time that wording, the divine, infinite calculus. Coupled with accept it. What is the divine infinite calculus? That sixth day which we have seen. Namely, the seven and the four. The sixth day, as I have said, is the seven and the four. Combined together is our whole calculus. There isn't anything going on but mind. Mind, not as a static mind. Mind that says, I manifest myself out of myself, and all that is going to be manifest is mind is manifesting through mind, capital M, and all that is being manifested is mind as mind, never anything else, and only for mind. That's the rhythm, the dynamics of being. Mind manifesting itself, out of itself, through itself, as itself, for itself. Spirit developing itself out of itself, but through itself, and always as itself, nothing as anything else, and only for itself, for the glory of spirit itself. What all is going to happen in this infinite calculus is soul identifying itself out of itself. We don't have to identify anything out of itself. And always through itself. We don't have to use any method to identify anything. Soul identifies itself through itself. And it identifies every little detail as itself. Never as anything contrary to itself. And always for itself. And so it is with principle. Principle really interprets itself. Not I interpreting the principle. It's principle interpreting itself out of itself, out of its infinite capacity of interpretation. And always through itself. Through principles itself. Not through human brain or thinking or anything like that. And as itself, always as a principle, and always for the glory of principle. And the same you have with life, life eternalizing itself, out of itself, and through itself, and as itself, and for itself. Truth demonstrating itself out of itself, never out of my thinking about the patient. Always through itself, never through my thoughts. Always through truth itself. And it demonstrates itself as truth, never as a healthy body or anything like that. It's always what is demonstrated, truth itself. Always for truth. And love certainly fulfills itself out of itself and through its own love and as love and for love. That's the calculus, the 7 and the 4. That's the 6th day. Man doesn't enter there, the term man. You just always see the synonymous term looking at themselves and seeing themselves in the eternal rhythm of the dynamics of being, as were Christ, Christianity, and science. In the 7th day, how can you fathom this infinite calculus? Human language cannot fathom it and cannot explain it. There are just 7 terms and 4 terms. What can you do more to it? Human language is inadequate to make out of these 7 and 4 points an infinite language. But when thought accepts that, then it accepts not only 7 and 4, but the divine infinite calculus of ideas. Terrific. Terrific. Try from time to time when it is quiet, perhaps when it is dark and nothing else hinders you, to think in terms of principle and idea, where it takes the whole world, your whole body, your whole family, your whole business, all the problem, and put it aside and say, now, what is ever going on? And start accepting that only one thing is going on, the 6th day. Elohim, looking at himself, knowing himself. And little by little, by listening, that's the new tongue, by listening, you accept. By adoring the greatness of it, you accept the greatness of it. By loving the greatness and promise of it, you accept it. It becomes near. By standing in awe before the magnitude of it, you accept it, and it conceives. The moment we accept, it conceives. What? It conceives of a new idea, because the infinite never repeats itself. And you begin to realize that you are a genius. Creative, a creative scientist, that now that divine infinite calculus is your text, but not the text which you interpret. What science does when we interpret with the system, the Bible or the textbook, but now it's the creative sense of science which says, now with this tool of science, something is conceived in you. And to us, a child is born. And it will be always a new child, a higher vision. A vision which nobody else has said, has seen, nor could have seen, because it's individualized, the divine mind, individualized as a new creation. That's the 7th, to accept, and it conceives. That's what Mary has done. She accepted, and after she has accepted it, she conceived.